Thank you for the invitation to speak on this really important topic, and can I firstly say it's fantastic to be amongst a group of such auspicious speakers and experts that I'm not. So I will talk about the Red Cross and our role, but I also want to touch on the impact on Aboriginal people, and firstly, if I can acknowledge that we're meeting on Ngunnawal country and that this land has been cared for by Ngunnawal people for generations. And Australian Red Cross honours the contribution of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people to the cultural wealth of our nation. And can I say that as an Aboriginal person myself, as an Injibundi from the northwest of WA, I'm always grateful to be welcome to country in the very genuine way I often am, whether it's in Ngunnawal, whether it's Dungari, whether it's Barpindji, wherever I am. It's fantastic to have that as part of our protocol in this country now. Australian Red Cross is one of 190 National Red Cross societies that, together with the International Committee of the Red Cross and the International Federation of the Red Cross, form the Red Cross Red Crescent Movement. The movement plays an active role in promoting international humanitarian law, otherwise known as the laws of war. We champion the rules that civilians should be spared during conflict. The Red Cross and Red Crescent emblems should be recognised as neutral and protected. Delivery of medical and humanitarian aid must be allowed safe access during war. War criminals should be prosecuted, and that there are methods and means of warfare, including certain weapons such as nuclear weapons, whose use should be made illegal under international law. Ideally, nuclear weapons would have been banned before they were ever in use. And this was actually achieved with the blinding laser weapons in 1995, when irreversible blindness was considered too great an injury to inflict in the course of war and inconsistent with the rules of war. Instead, the victims of Nagasaki and Hiroshima, as well as of nuclear testing in Australia and the Pacific, have provided us with visible proof of the weapons' tragic effects. And I think this exhibition, Black Mist Burnt Country, is well overdue and tells us about the Australian experience of nuclear testing. And I haven't had a chance to see it in person, but looking at some of the pictures in the catalogue, I think it is uncomfortable and it's shocking. And, you know, I think for a lot of people, not only is that history forgotten, it's actually completely unknown. So I think it is something that we do need to highlight, and we need to recognise it as part of our history. And I think for myself, some of the impact, particularly on the Aboriginal people, the Anangu in South Australia, who not only were dislocated and removed from their country, but also felt, you know, the huge effects and ongoing effects of illness. And a couple of years ago, I went to a series of, they were doing a tour around Australia, and one of them was at the Redfern Town Hall, and I was honoured to be on the platform with a number of the families and descendants of the families who were affected. And, you know, this has gone on twofold. One is the effect of the illness, but also the effect of being removed from your country, and when you get back to your country, it's so badly damaged that it's almost unrecognisable. So I would like to tell you about the work that Red Cross has done to ban the use of nuclear weapons, which obviously started with the use of the first nuclear bombs. And as everyone knows, on the 6th of August 1945, a white flash appeared over Hiroshima, and seconds later that city was flattened. Survivors described the experience of the instant incineration to the Red Cross. In a few seconds, thousands of human beings in the streets and gardens in the town centre, struck by a wave of intense heat, died like flies. Others lay writhing like worms, atrociously burned. All private houses, warehouses, disappeared as if swept away by supernatural power. Trams were picked up and hurled yards away as if they were weightless. Trains were flung off the rails. In the midst of this devastation, one hospital remained standing, the Hiroshima Red Cross Hospital. Over the next days, it struggled to treat thousands upon thousands who sought medical assistance. The delegate for the International Committee of the Red Cross, Dr. Marcel Junot, arrived 3 weeks later and reported that what he saw from the plane as he landed. Sorry. A site totally unlike anything I had ever seen before. The centre of the city was a sort of white patch, flattened and smooth like the palm of a hand. Nothing remained. The slightest trace of houses seemed to have disappeared. The white patch was about 2 kilometres in diameter. Around its edge was a red belt marking the area where houses had burned, extending quite a long way further, covering almost all the rest of the city. Juneau's research revealed the consequences of the bomb for Hiroshima's medical corps. Out of 300 doctors, 270 died or were injured. Out of 1,780 nurses, 1,654 perished or were injured. Today, the Japanese Red Cross still runs the hospitals that tends to the ongoing medical needs of the Hibakusha. I'm probably getting my pronunciations completely wrong, and their descendants in both Hiroshima and Nagasaki. If you visit Hiroshima, you can find tributes to Dr. Juneau and to the International Committee of the Red Cross. For the Red Cross, the experience of both Hiroshima and Nagasaki revealed that nuclear weapons should be conclusively recognised as violating the general principles of international humanitarian law. IHL, as I said, is known as the laws of war, and its general principles govern the use of all weapons during times of conflict, including nuclear weapons. And these five principles are: prohibit attacks directed at civilians or civilian objects, mandate that damage caused must be proportionate to the military objective, prohibit attacks that cannot distinguish between civilian and military people or objects, prohibit weapons that cause unnecessary or superfluous injury and with respect to the natural environment, prohibit damage to the environment which is widespread, long-term and severe. This protection includes a prohibition of weapons that are intended or may be expected to cause such damage to the natural environment and thereby prejudice the health or survival of the population. Once the effects of nuclear weapons are considered, I'm sure, you know, it's not hard to agree that no one can argue that they are compatible with those rules. The movement also sees an unacceptable humanitarian consequences of nuclear weapons within the context of our ability to adequately mount an emergency humanitarian response should these weapons be used. Our commitment to banning nuclear weapons is also based on our experience in Hiroshima and Nagasaki and our observation on the impact of testing on Indigenous people here and in the Pacific, and in our global expertise in humanitarian and emergency responses. In the case of nuclear war not even being able to access those affected, it is clear that even for the global movement, a humanitarian response would be impossible. The humanitarian consequences of a blast, the heat, electromagnetic pulse and radiation associated with nuclear explosions would be insurmountable for medical and humanitarian responders that are not reasonably comparable to experiences with natural disasters. Also, we recognise that the yield of modern nuclear weapons are thousands of times more potent than the bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The total destruction, not just of the impact site, but extensive areas surrounding the impact site, are foregone conclusions with those with modern nuclear weapons, making the ability of those left to respond almost non-existent. As experienced first responders to emergencies and catastrophes, the Red Cross Red Crescent movement worldwide is calling on all states to sign the treaty and to take steps to de-escalate tensions and work towards nuclear disarmament. I do think it's up to all the nations and all the organisations who are behind this movement to actually get behind this. And it does need a global movement and it needs a people movement to take this forward. And I think highlighting the effects and highlighting the history as done by this exhibition really goes a long way to reminding people of the danger of having these weapons and the impact it would have on humanity. Thank you.